But you have me at a loss. You know my name, but who are you?
Just another American who saw too many movies as a child. Another orphan of a bankrupt culture who thinks he's John Wayne, Rambo, Marshall Dillon.
I was always kind of partial to Roy Rogers, actually. I really like those sequined shirts.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hot town, summer in the city. Back of my neck getting dirt and gritty. Bend down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around, people looking half dead, walking on the sidewalk harder than a match head.
All right, welcome to Crespo Diesel Film School bonus episode. I'm your host, Chris Crespo. How's it going? This is the little bonus ep between Ep 99 and Episode 100.
Man, already Sunday. Sunday's the day.
Saturday's the day.
Saturday's the day.
Did I forget to mention that to you? Saturday's the day?
No, you told me. Okay. I just forgot to remember.
Right, just making sure. Yeah. Episode 100. But before we get there, we gotta stop here. This is the film school bonus episode for the month. And, you know, past bonus episodes. What were they, Drew? Oh, by the way, that was my co-host, Drew Zakagra. Drew, let's go. I don't have the app up anymore, so. That was a personalized.
That was weird.
Well, sort of what we did, a David Fincher one, right?
Mm-hmm.
We did a Christopher Nolan.
Mm-hmm.
What else did we do? What was the first one? Scorsese.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been all directors so far, right?
Yes.
That's all of them. I think that's all of them. No. Did we do... Then last... Was it October? Then we did the horror genre, right?
Yeah, that was last month.
See, that's the cool thing about the film school episodes. We can switch it up. Do what the F we want to do, you know? Just focus on one thing movie-wise.
It could be
an actor, a ficus... director, a style. In case you can't tell by the title of this episode, we are going to focus on Die Hard. And also, I'm sure you can tell by the very recognizable Die Hard theme that I just played. Or, you know.
And all the intro stuff.
Or the song from Die Hard 3, actually. First off, when you search for Die Hard soundtrack, like on Spotify, the only ones that pop up are... the last two movies.
It's awful.
And it's a shame. And then even then, like, I was listening to the Die Hard soundtrack, which was great, amazing. We'll talk about the music and all that stuff. But there's not, like, there wasn't that one good track that's perfect for opening a show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of intro, a lot of build up, a lot of stuff like that. Anyway, we're going to talk about Die Hard and a little bit about the sequels. Well, mostly... We're talking Die Hard. So, you ready, Drew?
Yes.
All right. Let's get a... Hey, Kevin. Kevin, come over here. Let's get the show started, Kevin.
Welcome to the Crespo Show.
Film school time. We are talking about Die Hard. I'm just going to start us off with a quote. Here we go. If you can't get behind Die Hard as a great American movie, then I'd argue that you hate greatness, movies, and America. That is Adam Sternberg from New York Times Magazine.
I can get behind that statement.
Get behind that for sure. Die Hard came out in 1988, starring Bruce Willis.
Yes.
At that time, I was like, who?
Some guy.
Some guy? The dude from Moonlighting, the comedy? The comedy TV show?
Yes.
That guy's going to be in an action movie.
Yes.
Get out of here, Fox. Hughes is crazy.
Well, but it's not like he was the first choice.
Oh, good Lord, was he not the first choice? How about the last choice?
How about the sixth?
And still somehow... Yeah, the last choice. The last one. And still somehow got paid $5 million for it?
Really?
Yeah. only had a budget of $28
million. And five went to Bruce.
Five went to him.
Damn.
That's crazy. I don't know how he pulled that off being like...
He must have had a really good agent at
the time. An amazing agent. Because like, I'm on TV. I'm on Moonlighting. I have a receding hairline. At that time, this is 88. So we're already in the throes of the American action genre, right?
Yeah, we've already had Commando.
Oh my God, we've had Commando. We'll talk about Commando in a second. Schwarzenegger, we've had Commando. Even something like Red Heat, where he's an invincible Russian cop, whatever, yeah. Working with Belushi. You already had Terminator by that point. You know, it exploded with that. Conan was even before that. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to think more action movies like Terminator, Red Heat, Commando, Predator.
Yeah.
Back to back. Yeah. Those movies. Predator, John McTiernan, same guy who directed Die Hard. Mm-hmm. A lot of crossover in these movies, you know. Very incestuous world, Hollywood, creatively. Then you have Stallone, who turned a fairly action-minded character drama about PTSD,
mm-hmm.
and he sequelized that into like crazy war movies.
Yeah,
about a time when there was no war going on, right? He was doing that. He was all jacked up and super ripped and shooting machine guns and killing.
I mean, hell,
dozens of people at a time. He exploded one guy with an exploding arrow.
Even in the most recent one, he's still just mowing down like
he's
droves
still,
of brown people.
Yeah, he's still doing it. In the in 2 and 3, he's mowing down Ruskies.
Well, you know.
Oh, no. And
Cold War.
And some Chinese. Yeah. No. Yeah, Cold War. Communists. Cold War. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Was there really Chinese or Vietnamese? No, they're Vietnamese. Anyway. Chuck Norris.
Yes.
Missing in Action.
Mm-hmm.
Firewalker. Delta Force. All those movies. He's out there kicking ass. He's unstoppable. He's been kicking his way. Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah.
His is a little different. His early mold blood movies like Bloodsport, Kickboxer had a lot of training, a lot of build-up, and then he was able to succeed, but still.
Yeah.
The Rocky IV model. The Rocky movies. Rocky 3 and 4 were shot like goddamn action movies.
Stallone
again. So that's the climate. And then, of course, when Die Hard is getting ready to get made and they're casting it, who do they go to? First, you know what? We got to start at the beginning.
The beginning.
The real first. 1979, Roderick Thorpe publishes his novel Nothing Lasts Forever.
Okay.
Like 1980, optioned by Clint Eastwood.
Okay.
He wanted to star in Nothing Lasts Forever, which is a story about a guy he's in a high-rise building, visit his daughter. Terrorists take over for political reasons. He's just trying to get his daughter back.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty goddamn similar. I mean, it's yes, right? It's right there.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting about this book, Nothing Lasts Forever, the book is a sequel to another novel. The guy, Roderick Thorpe, in 66 wrote a novel called The Detective. And in 68, that was turned into a movie called The Detective.
The Detective.
Starring Frank Sinatra.
Okay.
All right. When Fox acquired the rights to Nothing Lasts Forever, they offered the lead to Sinatra. They say they were contractually obligated to do so. Based on some contract from the 60s on The Detective. I don't know.
What?
That sounds weird, right?
That would have been a weird movie.
At that time, Sinatra was like 79?
Makes it even weirder.
So he was like, no, guys. Use is crazy. So they're all right, good. We're all on the same page. Bad idea. They were going to turn Nothing Lasts Forever. After Eastwood, his rights lapsed, he didn't make it. Fox got it. They were going to turn it into Commando 2.
Okay.
And Schwarzenegger was like, no. I'd not do Commando. I'm doing Total Recall. Total Recall. That's another Total amazing Recall. One. And he's a superhuman in that goddamn movie, right? So Commando 2 fell through. More rewriting, right? They probably made it a little more closer to the book then, as opposed to something that's more Commando-ish. They changed some names. And then, like you said, it goes to Stallone.
Yes.
Burt Reynolds.
Correct.
Richard Gere.
Uh-huh.
And
Harrison Ford. And then
that's five people right there.
And still one more.
Jackie Chan.
Mel Gibson.
That's right, because there is another connection there. Lethal Weapon. That's not so much a superhero type people, right? It was very actiony, but he was still more of a troubled hero, kind of a proto Die Hard type of thing, right?
Yeah.
Produced by Joel Silver, who worked with Matiernan on Die Hard. And then it finally somehow it gets around to Bruce Willis. And it takes a lot of convincing of a lot of different people. And amongst that convincing, Bruce Willis got himself $5 goddamn million. That blows my mind. It's crazy. And then they green light, go. Let's make this fucking movie. Turn the title into Die Hard. No one really knows what it means. I guess he dies hard is what he does, but he hasn't died yet, so we don't know how hard he dies. He doesn't die.
I mean, hell, and the last one, he's fucking invincible.
Should be called Die Not. Oh, we'll talk about that, too. We'll get to that. His invincibility. How he morphed into his character from Unbreakable.
So weird.
That's good beer. Yeah, it is weird. But, like I said, $28 million budget, $28 million. Ended up making $140 million worldwide. In 1988, that's a hit. That's a bona fide hit. You know?
Uh-huh.
Ended up being nominated for 4 Academy Awards. Didn't win any of them, but you can always say Die Hard is an Academy Award nominated film. For Best Sound Editing, Best Sound Mixing, Film Editing, and Visual Effects. Those visual effects, too, were... Because when you watch the movie, it's just like a lot of explosions and gunplay, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's like there's shit where like the huge when he drops the C4, he wraps up the C4 in a computer and he drops it down the elevator shaft and it causes that the elevator shaft explosion, right? And the fireball comes up at him, he has to jump out of the way. You can tell watching the movie that he's composited in front of something. Like he's leaning in front of what would ostensibly be a green screen, maybe it even was.
Yeah.
And then they composited an image in front of him. Now to get that image of the fireball shooting up the elevator shaft. It's a miniature elevator shaft. They use forced perspective to make it look deeper than it was. And then the problem was when they shot the fireball up from the bottom, a tiny fireball, and they recorded it and played it back, like because of the actuality of the physics and as opposed to the forced perspective, it appeared as if the fireball was changing speeds as it went up the elevator. They're like, shit! So they had to like find a way to record it, the entire shooting of the fire in different speeds. They did a bunch of different ways, and they just picked the one that looked the best.
Nice.
And it ended up looking great, right? The one where, and then also that cuts to a shot of outside, and there's a huge explosion where all the glass gets blown out, like an entire floor, like blows up really bright. To get that effect, to get the brightness, they went out and bought all these light bulbs, like for flashlights, but that were the brightest possible light bulbs possible. And they bought it, all of them in L.A. Bought every single one. Wrapped it around that whole part of the building and then, like, fucking set them off at once. So, give you that as bright light as possible. And then the explosion is, like, another miniature, a building miniature. Tiny explosion. And then they composited that onto the light bulbs and put that in front of the actual people. It's a bunch of different shit put together. Amazing, because it's all done pre... Now you just control, you know, save.
Yeah.
Fucking command.
I mean,
command key.
There was
HTML,
actually. There was a lot of like really good special effects in that movie. Like they, because they're on the computer, you know, going through getting wiped in and out.
Yeah. There's the obviously explosion on the roof.
Yeah.
There's the actual physical stunt work of the when they did the end at the end of the movie. Hans Gruber dies at the end. Spoiler alert. Hans Zimmer dies too. Hans Gruber, when he falls off the building, that was a stunt where they actually dropped Alan Rickman 70 feet, like 75 feet on a soundstage.
Mm-hmm.
So when in the movie, you know, like the watch gets loosened up and has that moment in slow motion where he's like the gravity gives out and he starts dropping. Then he has this look of terror on his face.
Yeah.
Totes real. He was like, oh my God. He got scared.
Because really?
Because he really got dropped like 75 feet. Even though he knew he was safe, he was on a rig and all that shit. You know, that's how you go for the realism. Also striving for realism. Actually, hyper-realism. They made special blanks that had bigger flashes. And oh shit. You know who dies hard? Juice to Cogburn versus the world. Juice to Cogburn versus the world. Oh, here we go. Right. Do this one. This one, it's a Die Hard game. It's a Die Hard round. It all ties together. We're still going to learn some stuff. Actually, we can see how much you know, Drew, based on the influence of Die Hard. is huge. That's why we're talking about it. That's why we're doing a whole bonus episode based on it. One of the reasons, one of the ways it's influenced films after its release is that, you know, it's the setup of one guy, one hero in one location, usually one location, go up against a bunch of bad guys and taking them out one at a time. Right?
Okay.
That's the, and then that ends up when you get the Die Hard on a blank description.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you Die Hard on a blank, and you tell me the movie that I'm talking about.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Pick up what I'm throwing down?
Kind of.
And there are multiple answers, so if you get some of them, you know, if you get one of the multiple answers, you get it right. Like number two has 1, 2, 3, 4 answers.
What?
So if you get one of those four.
I'm so confused.
All right, here we go. Number one, for example, what movie was Die Hard on a Bus?
Die Hard on a Bus. Three?
No. Die Hard 3 is Die Hard in a City.
Oh, yes, you are correct. It is Die Hard in a City.
Speed.
Speed. Oh. Oh, okay.
Do you get it now?
Now I get it.
All right. Number two.
Now I get it.
Die Hard on a Plane.
Die Hard on a Nonstop?
It's not one of the ones I was looking for.
Okay, that's fine.
Because it's...
I mean, I'll take the no.
I'll have to give you a no on that one. I was looking for Passenger 57.
Okay.
Or Air Force One.
Okay.
Which is Die Hard on a Plane with, on Air Force One.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Also would have accepted Con Air.
Okay.
Even though it's more of a two-hander because of John Cusack, but still, also would have accepted the Executive Decision.
All right.
Because it kind of centers a little bit on Kurt Russell, even though there's a team. There's variations. That's why I'm accepting multiple ways.
Okay.
Number three, Die Hard on a Boat.
Yeah, but still, even but in Nonstop, I mean, yeah, he's an air marshal, but that's more, I mean, John McClane was a cop.
Right, yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know?
Keep making the argument. Sell me on it.
So he was in Air Marshal. John McClane was a cop.
All right, he's got to be going against a whole group of bad guys. There are multiple bad guys.
And terrorists.
They are terrorists.
And just like in Die Hard 1, you know, Bruce Willis meets Alan Rickman beforehand. And then at the end, it's the bad guy. Same thing in Nonstop. He meets Scoop beforehand.
You sold me. I'm going to give it to you. You sold me on that one. Nonstop. It follows the mold. Die Hard on a Plane.
Boom.
The specific Die Hard on a Plane. Isn't that crazy how many of those are made? Anyway,
yeah.
Good job. I like it.
All right.
Number three.
Got that point back.
You earned it. Die Hard on a Boat.
Speed 2 Cruise Control.
You got the full title. Also would have accepted Under Siege.
Okay.
Under
Siege. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Number four, Die Hard at a Hockey Game.
Oh, what was the name of that freaking movie with goddamn... Oh, man. It has just Jean-Claude Van Damme in it.
Yeah.
I don't remember the name of the movie,
it's
though.
It's a sports term. Be a good sports trick? Term. Oh, I was going to say, a good pun for an action movie would be Sudden Death.
Oh, yeah,
Sudden Death. You were bouncing all around that one. Number five. You should definitely get this one. Die Hard at the White House.
White House Down.
White House Down, or same year.
What was the other one called? I don't remember what the other one was called.
Olympus Has Fallen.
That was the one I hated, that's why.
And that's the one that's getting the sequel. London has fallen?
Jamie Foxx did not have a chrome rocket launcher in the other one.
I know. You don't got to sell me. White House Down also more of, I mean, you got Channing Tatum in the white tank top. I mean, come on. They were going for it. But you got that one right. Number six, Die Hard on a Train.
Die Hard on a Train. Oh, wasn't there an Under Siege movie on a train?
That would be Under Siege.
Damn it. Under Siege 2?
They only made two of them.
Yeah, there we go.
Full title, Under Siege 2, : Dark Territory.
Okay.
I'll give it to you. Yeah, you worked that one out. Number seven, Die Hard on Alcatraz.
Oh, The Rock.
That's right. Number eight, Die Hard on a Mountain.
cliffhanger.
That's correct. Number 9. Die Hard. Ooh, if you get this one, I'll be impressed. Die Hard at a prep school. Toy Soldiers. Remember that one?
Vaguely.
With Samwise Gamgee?
Yeah, vaguely.
Terrorists Take Over School. Number 10, finally. What movie was Die Hard at an airport?
Die Hard 2?
That's correct. Good job. Hey, I got most of it right there. See? So, yeah, that's the influence of Die Hard. All those movies. That specific structure of you got the hero. You got the bad guy. Usually a group of bad guys. Usually stuck in a location. Even if the location's moving, you're stuck in that location.
Yep.
A lot of cracking wise, a lot of one-liners. Always bet on black. I mean, come on. It doesn't get better than that. And then also, it does, you know, in subsequent years, looking back, it does take all of these other movies, all these copycats and imitators to come out to really show you how good Die Hard really is.
Yeah, it's awesome.
They don't get it all. Some of them get some things right. Some do it better than others, but none of them are Die Hard. It's because they're trying to beat that movie instead of being their own movies. That's why it took something like, you know, forever for The Matrix to come around. Something different.
Yeah.
Different archetypes. A different set story instead of the Die Hard story, you know, for people to be like, oh, shit, you can do other things with action movies. Going back to the original Die Hard. Directed by John McTiernan, who had just done Predator with Schwarzenegger, which is how they try to get the Commando 2 going, but Schwarzenegger was like, no, we're not doing Commando 2. So instead they ended up with Die Hard with Bruce Willis. Are you going to cut me with that thing, man?
Yes.
Playing with the box cutter, man. Uh-huh. It's fucking scary. He got cinematographer Jan de Bont. Okay. This fella, Dutch fella, first American job, first Hollywood job, he brought his European sensibilities with him. You know, at that time, obviously, artistically, cinema in Europe had gone to a lot of different places that hadn't gone in America. Like, America had that great 70s era of filmatism, but outside of that, there's a lot of very structured mainstream stuff. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, you had the French New Wave, you know, Italian films of the 60s and 70s, Italian horror, et cetera, et cetera. When he brought Jan de Bont over and he helped him, you know, the director of photography helps with a lot of framing and, you know, the style of the movie, the way the camera moves. He brought a lot of subtle camera work that if you watch the movie now, you barely even notice it. But at that time, McTiernan had to fight like tooth and nail with certain people, with producers and even editors. Like, no, this is the shot that I want in here. There's a reason why the camera is up high. It starts and at this moment it comes down. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a music cue. It's already, the camera needs to do this. And it's like he did a lot of the wide framing. A lot of master sustain masters. A lot of, it's just very clean looking. If you watch the movie, the camera never shakes.
Yeah.
Must be on a tripod or a Steadicam the entire time.
Yeah.
Because there's never, none of this shaky crap. When did that become a thing? Is it because of 90s Michael Bay that, even then, that's fast editing, but the shaking of the camera also signified immediacy. You know? Yeah, it is a cheap thing to do, too, to make it seem like something important's happening or it's in the moment.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just let me see what's going on.
No, the camera has to shake.
For crying out loud. The real thing, too, that set Die Hard apart, you had all the superhero action stars of the 80s, and then here comes Bruce Willis. He's balding. He's like 70s fit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even 80s fit.
Yeah, he's not super ripped or anything.
He's not ripped. He is not ripped. He's just a dude. Spends most of the movie in his tank top.
With no shoes.
Looking very much not ripped with no shoes. Vulnerability.
Poor guy.
Vulnerability, right? We can all relate to not having shoes and having to run through glass.
Yeah.
While being shot by terrorists. We can all relate. Okay? He was, when the movie starts, he's going to see his estranged wife who left him, you know, and then he's like, he's telling the limo driver, he's like, I don't know, I'm going to give it a shot, I'm going to try to see what I can do, we're going to go talk, and then like the first conversation, it goes bad after a couple minutes, and then he's by himself, he's like, God damn it, like, I'm such an idiot talking to himself, right? So already this guy's a fuck up. You can tell.
Yep.
He's nothing special. He's kind of a loser.
Yeah.
Kind of a loser New York cop. And then an extreme situation happens when terrorists happen to take over the fucking building that he's in. And he's on the run. He's like, oh shit. I took my shoes off in the room because I was making fists with my toes on the carpet, which does feel quite good if you ever, do it. It's a real thing, dude. So he's on the run, and then it's him against a whole bunch of terrorists. And the whole movie then is one night in the building, him running, hiding, taking them out,
killing lots of people.
And then, one by one, killing.
Talking to homeboy on the intercom the whole time.
Yes, the other reason why Die Hard's like, oh, this movie holds up so well. Alan Rickman. Maybe. Has to be. Top 5 movie villains of all time. I'm thinking hard. I mean, you got Darth Vader.
Yeah.
And then Hans Gruber. I mean, come on. Come on. He's so good. He's so good. His first movie.
Yeah.
His first film. Joel Silver and John McTiernan went to see a production of Dangerous Liaisons, a stage production. He played the bad guy, the villain of Dangerous Liaisons. And they were just like, we found fucking Hans, man. We found him. Now, the thing with Hans Gruber, old Alan Rickman, first time doing a Hollywood film, first time doing an action-type movie, right? Whenever he had the gun, remember I was mentioning earlier about the blanks with that were shoot extra loud?
Yeah.
Because John McTiernan wanted, like, fucking startled reactions, and he wanted, like, hyper-realism to the violence.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Rickman could not keep himself from wincing every time he pulled the trigger.
Really?
Every time he would make that face. So every time he shoots someone, except for one scene, every time he pulls the trigger, the camera has to cut away. You can't see his face. Because he's...
Yeah,
when he shoots Takagi... Spoiler, Takagi dies like 30 minutes into the movie. He's a nice guy, too. That guy, real life, just died this year. He was like in his 90s, I think. 91?
Really?
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Shout out to that dude. You see it in his face. When he pulls the trigger and he shoots a guy, he makes a little wincy. Like, oh, I'm kind of girlish around guns. But he's so good. He's very, very charismatic, He's a very charismatic person that comes across. And then his accent, just the way he speaks, he's very unique in the way he talks, Which is another trope that's passed on down through movie history.
Yeah.
The villains with the crazy voices. It's not a crazy voice, but it's an interesting voice.
Yeah.
Especially since, like you mentioned, they do a lot of talking.
They do.
A lot of trash talking. Talking on the intercom.
Yep.
They got to build up that relationship. And then the whole thing where, like you said, they meet... Earlier,
yeah,
and before they get up again at the end,
yeah, Rickman's got a American accent in the beginning.
Yeah, that's how he convinces McClane. He tells him it's like Bob. His name's Bob Clay. It's like Clay. Up to for a while in the production, they were trying to figure out a way. They had already started filming the movie, and they're like, "How? Well, they started filming." Oh. But they're like, we got to figure out a way to get these two guys together before the climax. They do a lot of talking, but if we get them face to face somehow. And then they found out Alan Rickman, like, he was just hanging out, I guess doing rehearsals or something. And he just busts out an American accent out of nowhere, like, kind of joking around.
Yeah.
And then they're just like, wait a second. We can use this. We can do something with this. And that's how that whole scene came about. And then in the scene, he's up there. He's looking for the detonators. He's looking at the explosives. And then he drops down to the ground, totally busted up his knee, tore a bunch of ligaments.
Nice.
Had to go to the hospital. Then he came back and shot the rest of that scene. Standing on one leg with like a brace.
Sweet.
Under his pants. Bruce Willis, he got hurt. What happened to him? I'm trying to think. Was it that one? He got hurt on Die Hard 4 for sure. I can't remember. Anyway, making action movies is dangerous work.
Well, yeah, it's an action movie.
It is an action movie. Van Damme got sued and lost for damages for cutting some stuntman's eye with a knife. On set.
Nice.
He was like, instead of Cyborg. Tangent. So you got charismatic, awesome Alan Rickman, and then you got the vulnerable Bruce Willis, John McClane, who was an action movie star like no one's seen up to that point, because he's like a Joe Schmo. When the shit goes down, he's cursing. He's like, fuck. It's like, he's always like freaking out. He's trying to improvise and he's like making mistakes here and there, it's crazy how different he is from your Rambos and John Matrix and all the other big action stars of the Action Jackson, fucking Carl Weathers. You know, all these guys are badasses. John McClane's just a dude. But he's a dude who manages to get shit done.
Yeah.
And we can identify with that. That's American chutzpah know-how.
Mm-hmm.
Also, and then, like, one great way we get that vulnerability is his relationship with the dude from Family Matters.
Yeah.
Reginald Vell Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the reason why there are three characters in the movie with the last name Johnson is all joke on him.
Nice.
That's kind of weird.
It's kind of weird, yeah.
Right? Going a long way to pull a joke on a dude whose name really isn't Johnson, it's Vell Johnson.
Well, apparently somebody thought it was funny.
Someone high up enough to be like, we're changing all these character names. Those two dudes, Agent Johnson and Agent Johnson. And we'll make one black, we'll make one white, and they'll say no relation. There we go. Comedy gold.
Boots.
Actually, it's kind of funny. Paul Gleason is the bumbling cop, the idiot cop.
Mm-hmm.
He's great. I only know him for this, for Die Hard. And Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. Both movies, he's a dick.
Yeah, he is.
Guy's a good actor.
At least good at being a dick.
Unless he's good at being a dick.
Maybe he's just really a dick.
Well, he passed away, too. I'm going to try to keep track of all the people who made these, were in these movies, but have since passed. So, rest in peace, Takagi.
That's a lot of people.
Rest in peace, Paul Gleason. Well, people that matter. I mean, yeah, all the extras. I'm sure tons of extras have passed on over years. Real people.
Mm-hmm.
Real people. The one scene where he's talking to Vell Johnson, Sergeant Al Powell, right? And he's it's after he runs through the glass, and he's in the bathroom. He's taking the glass out of his feet, right? He's picking the glass out, and he's on the walkie-talkie. He's like, "Tell my wife that I'm not gonna make it. So tell my wife that I love her and I'm sorry." And he's crying, et cetera, et cetera. Whole scene lasts maybe 60 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
It's fast.
Yeah.
But that scene made the movie, and it made Bruce Willis's movie career, because a lot of directors saw that and were like, "Oh no, this guy's got the goods.
He can actually act.
He's got the goods. He can do it. I can make this guy. I can use this guy because he's tough, but he's also showing his vulnerability that these other people aren't doing. So I can." That's how he got 12 Monkeys. That's how he got other stuff, I can't remember.
Yeah.
It was off the top of my head. But that's a good one, though. 12 Monkeys.
Yeah, 12 Monkeys, awesome.
Good example.
Brad Pitt's all weird in that one.
Yeah, he is a lot. Well, I guess that's Terry Gilliam just being like, my weirdness is radiating into you. Now you're all weird. And Madeline Stowe's like, I can't. I'm not very good at this acting thing. So, in Die Hard, it's I mean, come on. Tons of things that are great about it. Score is fantastic. You got a Michael Kamen score, who also did like Lethal Weapon. He was doing a lot of big movies at the time. He was kind of the, I don't want to say Hans Zimmer. He's more of the Michael Giacchino of the time, which is like one step down below Hans Zimmer. Okay. If you can't get Hans Zimmer, you get Giacchino over there.
Well, no, it's not if you can't get Hans Zimmer. It's if you can't get what's his face?
Who's his name? His what's it?
Star Wars.
Oh, Johnny Williams.
Yeah, if you can't get Johnny Williams.
Well, yeah, but you get Johnny Williams if you want that Johnny Williams sound. Or like, I need you to do this, I need you to do that. He's like, can I put some big horns in there? I guess. But John Williams can give you that. That sounds like...
Yeah.
Is that Star Wars? Superman? I can't... Is that a combination of the two?
It's all the same.
John Williams is like, I can't tell anymore. I don't know anymore.
It all sounds the same.
Help me, I'm in my own old man hell of many dollars because I'm so rich.
Yeah. Gotta be.
It's gotta be, right? It's gotta be. Fantastic score. And then, of course, you know, we already mentioned Vell Johnson, Willis, Rickman, Takagi guy. Rest in peace. William Atherton is a reporter guy. Slimy reporter dude.
Yeah.
That guy does a good job. Bonnie Bedelia, she got the gig because she was buddies with Bruce Willis. And Bruce Willis is like, you gotta get this is our Holly right here.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew, well, they got good chemistry. It worked out pretty good for them, you know? That dude who played Ellis,
mm-hmm.
I don't know that guy's name, but he is awesome. He is great. He's like, he goes in and gets the coke. He asks for the coke, and he's like trying to negotiate with McClane on the walkie-talkie while Hans is sitting there. At one point, he goes, Hans, booby. And then he improv'd that line, apparently. And then Alan Rickman wasn't expecting it, and he's like, booby, like, what the hell? So there's a shot of bewilderment on his face.
Yeah.
And they kept that. It's like, This is that's an actual two like genuine moments in there for Rickman. Look of fear dropping off the building, genuine, and that bewilderment to Hans Booby.
What?
Who is this actor? I gotta work on my Alan Rickman. That's takes a lot of work to do a good Alan Rickman.
Yeah, it does.
Anyway. So great actors, great score. Jan de Bont,
great everything.
Fantastic cinematographer, John McTiernan, bringing it all together. He's killing it. I mean, between Predator and Die Hard, come on. Those are two movies that are imminently watchable.
I mean, and Die Hard also has the virtue of being a Christmas movie.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah.
The greatest Christmas movie ever?
I don't know. Gremlins.
A great Christmas movie or the greatest Christmas movie ever?
Gremlins is pretty good.
Gremlins is damn good. Gremlins is damn good. Lethal Weapon, also a Christmas movie, but I would still put that just below Gremlins and Die Hard.
So that is that is three Christmas movies you should watch every Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you have time, I don't know, throw an Iron Man 3 because Shane Black did it.
He likes Christmas.
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Also.
Great Christmas movie. Yeah.
Any Shane Black movie is technically
Christmas.
A good Christmas movie, at the very least. Great Christmas movie. They use Beethoven's Ode to Joy, which sounds very holiday-ish, you know, as well. They use that as like the villain's theme, and then that theme crops up throughout the Die Hard lore for years on end. You know, that one decision there. And the reason McTiernan used it, really, is because Kubrick used it as the main theme for the ultraviolence in Clockwork Orange.
Ah, yes, he did. Maybe that's where I got my love of symphonies and murder.
Possible.
Together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because when
Kubrick loved scoring weird stuff with beautiful symphonic music. Yeah. You know, if it's not Space Baby, it's Rape. Actually, no, Rape was Singing in the Rain, which is even more twisted. Because the guy has to sing it.
Yeah.
Fucking Malcolm McDowell.
So weird.
Tangent. I need a tangent alert button. Or an alarm.
Tangent alarm.
Something super 90s like that. Yes, it's a Christmas movie. Great Christmas movie.
Awesome.
Great Christmas action movie. Super influential. For many reasons, it's Die Hard. It's awesome. It still holds up. 88, 98, 2000.
Oh, yeah.
Almost 30 years now.
Every time it comes on, I can't help but watch it. Doesn't matter where it is in the movie. I'll watch it till it ends.
I can watch it. I watch it each and every time. Argyle. I don't know if that guy's still alive or dead. I'm assuming he's alive.
Yeah. Well, he was young enough.
You know what I'm saying? He's a young fella. And then, of course, like I said, $28 million budget. $140 million worldwide. So it was a hit.
Money.
People liked it. So what happens when a movie makes money?
You get sequels.
They make more of them. Let's talk a little bit about some of these sequels here. 2 years later, they jumped right on it. Jumped on the popularity of that movie. 2 years later, Die Hard 2, which is sometimes known as, you know, you can call it Die Hard 2, Die Harder.
Yeah.
But really, Die Harder was the, the tagline type of thing, you know, the marketing thing. They upped the budget from $24 million to $70 million. Goddamn lot of money. And you know what? Worldwide gross of $240 million.
And there you go. So spend more, make more.
Spend more, make more in this one. Now, John McTiernan could not come back to do Die Hard 2 because he was making The Hunt for Red October.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, nothing too shabby about that one.
Nope.
Right? So, since he wasn't available, they got the hottest Finnish director they could find, Renny Harlin. He was considered the most successful director from Finland to make it in Hollywood. At that point, Renny Harlin had made A Nightmare on Elm Street 4.
Okay.
And The Adventures of Ford Fairlane, starring Andrew Dice Clay. Somehow, he talked himself
into Die Hard 2.
Well,
I mean, he got it.
Yeah, he got it. After Die Hard 2, he went on to make Cliffhanger, Die Hard on a Mountain.
Yeah.
Cutthroat Island, starring his wife, at least at the time, Gina Davis.
Okay.
Also, Gina Davis, The Long Kiss Goodnight. Another Shane Black Christmas story.
That was an awful movie.
Deep Blue Sea.
Deepest bluest. My hat is like a shark's fin.
That Driven, that Stallone racing movie, F1 racing movie.
Oh, yeah.
Mindhunters with Val Kilmer. You ever see that one?
I think so.
It's on the Netflix. I heard it's batshit insane. Like, I've been meaning to watch it. He did that. I mean, it's nosediving. He did that debacle, Exorcist, The Beginning.
Ugh.
And then, which was actually shot by one director, and then he was hired to come in and reshoot like 90% of the movie.
So weird.
And most recently, he just came out with a movie this year. Earlier this year. The Legend of Hercules. Starring, what's that guy? That guy from those movies?
That guy from those movies? What guy? Was this the one with The Rock?
Kellan Lutz.
Oh, so this was the one without The Rock.
The one without The Rock. The one with the dude that was in Expendables 3.
Oh, Kellan Lutz. Yeah, that.
I think that guy's from the Twilight movies.
Sounds awful.
Oh, yeah. No, I wouldn't recommend. No, stay away. But still, he did Die Hard 2. And of all those movies.
And Die Hard 2 is the best.
Yeah, Die Hard 2 is his best movie. And then immediately, quality's dropping from the first film to the second. Obviously, no one disputes that. It was still a pretty well-received movie when it came out. People liked it. It's good. Die Hard 2 is good popcorn entertainment still.
Mm-hmm.
It's well-made. It follows the template, but puts it in the airport, so it's a little bigger now. Instead of one building, it's like a bunch of buildings put together. Each movie does get bigger. You go from Die Hard is Die Hard in a building.
Yes.
There's a legend that someone pitched a movie to a bunch of executives saying, oh, this is Die Hard in a building, forgetting that the first Die Hard was set in a building. Anyway. Die Hard is Die Hard in a building. Die Hard 2 is Die Hard in an airport.
Yes.
Die Hard 3 is Die Hard in a city. Die Hard 4 is Die Hard on the Eastern Seaboard, which is a collection of cities. Yeah. So they're just making it bigger. Die Hard 5 is Die Hard in Russia. So now it's an even bigger collection of cities in the country, which means Die Hard 6 has to be Die Hard in the world. No, in the world.
In the world.
It's going to take the entire planet to unfold the story.
It's going to be going and then hit every continent.
And then Die Hard 7.
Die Hard in space.
Die Hard in space. Because then you have the universe to work with.
Or maybe the moon first and then space.
Die Hard on the moon. I would count Die Hard on the moon as Die Hard in space.
Okay.
I'll do both. That's the only way it works. How they haven't made a Die Hard into space yet, I have no idea. Someone write that and send it to us so I can put my name on it. And then that's how a lot of things.
That's
how a lot of things happen. Now, the first Die Hard, like I said, adapted by from the novel Nothing Lasts Forever. The second Die Hard, Die Hard 2, adapted from a Walter Wager. Walter Wager novel called 58 Minutes. In this novel, again, very similar to Die Hard 2 because it's based on it, a dude shows up at an airport to pick up his wife who's going to land on the next plane or whatever. Terrorists take over the airport for their political gains or whatever, and they're like, if you don't give us these things in 58 minutes... we're gonna make all the planes crash somehow. I forget how. And the first plane to come in scheduled is this dude's wife's plane. So he's got to find a way to save his wife. So you pretty much
Die Hard 2.
Die Hard 2. Now Die Hard 2, they added this whole thing with the general and the general's like he was being transported in. He was being extradited into the country. So William Sadler was like the colonel guy with all his bad dudes or whatever, and they were trying to get the general so they can all escape together.
Yeah.
Right. That general guy was played by Franco Nero,
mm-hmm.
who's the original Django.
Oh, nice.
The guy was in the very, very first Django movie from the 60s. In Django Unchained, he's in the... He's the dude, the Italian dude, chilling in the... when you first meet Leo DiCaprio, mm-hmm. and the two guys are fighting, and he's like cheering on his guy. He's that guy.
Okay.
His character is kind of based on Manuel Noriega. Kind of big at that time in the 80s. And then all the army villains like William Sadler and all those dudes, and how they're like they're military, but they're working with the bad guy, like a South American dictator or whatever. That's the whole based on the Iran-Contra scandal.
Okay,
shit. So they were thinking a little bit when they put this stuff together. They didn't just shit something out. They had some ideas or pulling from even though the movie features Bruce Willis killing a dude with the icicle.
Yeah, so awesome.
It's pretty awesome. It also features John Leguizamo. If you only had one line, and it's dubbed.
The
poor guy. He claims that his role was bigger, but then when he showed up and they saw how short he was, they were like,
"Yeah, I don't think so.
We got to cut this back." But then, how did he get the part in the first place?
I don't know.
Also, one of the henchmen who has like one line. You see him a few times. When he has one line, Robert Patrick. who 2 years later would be the T-1000 in Terminator 2. And then, of course, the coming in and you think he's the good military guy. It turns out he's also a bad military guy. The one and only John Amos.
Yeah.
That guy's awesome. And he's really good in this movie. He's the type of dude who, like, you could see him coming to America and he's the jovial, you know, dumb fat dad.
Yep.
And then you see him in this movie and he's a total fucking badass. Yeah. He's bossing people around. He's, you know, on a Dennis Franz. Tell him, get the fuck out of here, you fat, fat fuck. Go do NYPD Blue. And he's like, all right, I'm going because I'm Dennis Franz. Apparently, this is Bruce Willis's least favorite film of the series.
Die Hard 2. Really?
Yeah, which I find surprising. Because even though, I mean, it's not as good as the first one. I wouldn't even call it the greats. I still think it's a very watchable movie.
And it's definitely better than 4 and 5.
For sure. We'll talk about those in a second. So Die Hard 1 was weird how almost all the Die Hard movies were adapted from different things. So Die Hard 1 was adapted from one novel.
Yeah.
Nothing Lasts Forever. Die Hard 2 adapted from 58 minutes. In 1995, they made Die Hard with a Vengeance. Official title.
Yeah.
Die Hard with a Vengeance. No Die Hard 3 shit around here. Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yeah, because Jeremy Irons had a fucking vengeance.
Jeremy Irons! But here's what happened. Here's what happened with that. $90 million budget. Added an extra $20 million on top of it. Ended up making $366 million worldwide. Highest grossing film of 1995.
Wow. Yeah.
Huge hit. Big deal. Directed by John McTiernan, who came back. All right. At that point, he was done Predator, Die Hard, Hunt for October. Also, before he came back to Die Hard, he did Medicine Man with Sean Connery. And then Last Action Hero with Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, at that time, when they started making the movies, like, look, we got this awesome, you know, meta script. We're going to give it to Shane Black to do a rewrite. We're going to get the fucking guy who did Die Hard to direct it. We got a fucking Schwarzenegger in it. This is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Everything was stacked in their favor, and that movie was a big turn.
Yeah, it was.
Part of the reason was because the script ended up being rewritten, like, 10, 15 times before they agreed on when to make the movie. But at that point, it was just a big cluster. As you know, I don't think there's any Christmas in the movie. You know Shane Black put a bunch of Christmas trees on that fucking script, and then someone came around and took them all out. Bunch of jerks. Then he did Die Hard with a Vengeance, and after that he did the 13th Warrior with Antonio Banderas. Remember that one? Did you ever see that one?
Which one?
The 13th Warrior with Antonio Banderas?
Yes!
And then they did Thomas Crown Affair.
It was Beowulf.
Yeah, well, it was based on Crichton's Eaters of the Dead.
And Beowulf.
Yeah. I mean, it's a sensible Eaters of the Dead, but that was based a little bit on Beowulf. It's an archetype.
Yeah.
It's like saying, oh, Neo's Jesus. Well, no shit.
We get it.
It's the archetype. Jesus was someone else when he came around.
Yeah.
That sort of has been around. Thomas Crown Affair.
That movie's awesome.
With Pierce Brosnan. And then, you know, it happens. People just start shitting the bed. Rollerball. Remake.
Oof.
Not too good. This one was disappointing. Basic. With Samuel Jackson and John Travolta reteaming them. The first time they got back together since Pulp Fiction. But apparently, like, half an hour of that movie got edited out. You know, by like a studio or someone. It chopped down to a 90-minute movie. It made no fucking sense.
No.
I don't think there's a director's cut available.
It happens from time to time.
Now, Die Hard with a Vengeance was not based on a book, but instead was based on a screenplay called Simon Says.
Yeah.
Written by this fella, Jonathan Hensley? Hensley? Hensley. Something like that. I only see it written. I've never heard it said out loud. Now, Simon Says was purchased by Fox, who makes all the Die Hard movies.
Yep.
They purchased that screenplay as a movie for Brandon Lee.
Ooh.
Who had just, at that point, he just made Rapid Fire.
Yep.
And he had yet to do, you know,
The Crow,
because that's when Bullet in the Belly.
You know, tangent, I heard somebody's trying to remake The Crow.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I've that's been They've been working on that for a few years. I mean, they snuck out like three Crow sequels. One of them's got Eddie Furlong. Yeah, one's got Nick Stahl.
None of them were any good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It's fine. That's the thing. Reboot it.
Now, I saw the second one, that Crow City of Angels, and it was just... Oh.
I saw that shit in theaters, yo.
So did I.
Iggy Pop was awesome in it, though.
He was.
Iggy Pop. I was so excited for that movie when that dude, Vincent... I can't believe his name was Vincent Price. When that dude was on David Letterman to promote the movie, it's like, oh, shit, I gotta see this. And then he was like some mumbly French guy, and I was like, fuck this guy. Then I saw the movie, and I was like, fuck this movie.
Yep.
Soundtrack was pretty good, though. Tangent over. Brandon Lee dies.
Yes.
Snout Fox is like, shit, we got the script. Put it back in the pile. Poor Jonathan Hensley. He's like, my movie's getting made. Brandon Lee dies. He doesn't think poor Brandon Lee. He's like, poor my movie.
Yeah.
Shit's not getting made anymore. Now, Joel Silver, at that point, tried to buy... He wanted to... This is weird. He wanted to buy the script from Fox for Lethal Weapon 4.
Okay.
But Fox wouldn't sell it to him. I think because Lethal Weapon 4 isn't Fox.
Yeah.
So a little bit of executive sabotage, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not giving you for a competing studio.
Yeah.
So Lethal Weapon 4 ended up not getting made for like another 6-7 years, right? McTiernan finds the script laying around. He reads it. He's like, this is fucking...
Boom, Die Hard.
I can make this into a Die Hard movie. Hensley says that the first hour of Die Hard with a Vengeance... The first 60 minutes of the movie? That's an hour, right? 60 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
That's something I checked. Word for word, his screenplay.
Oh, wow.
Like the original.
Yeah.
It's all there. I mean, obviously, they changed the name of the hero to John McClane. You know, Zeus became a man instead of a woman because it was originally a woman. But the scenarios, the whole... He was with the sandwich board in Harlem. You know, all that shit. It's all in there first hour. And then it, you know, veers off a little bit. But still. Yeah, they find a way to make it a Die Hard movie somehow. Now, although this is interesting, Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson, before this movie, they were in two movies together. Can you guess what those two movies were? Can you think of those two movies? I'll give you a hint. They did not share any scenes in those movies.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Well, they were in Pulp Fiction together.
Yes! I never mentioned Pulp Fiction. Think a little year before that. Think action spoof comedy. a movie that people forget about that I think it's pretty funny.
Action spoof comedy.
Starring Emilio Estevez.
Well, no, but weren't they in Unbreakable together?
That's after. That was like 2000, 2001.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't think of it.
National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon 1.
They were both in that movie?
Yeah. Well, Samuel Jackson was the Murtaugh character, because Emilio Estevez was the Riggs.
Yeah.
And Samuel Jackson was the Murtaugh.
Okay.
And Bruce Willis had a little pop-up in there, because he was spoofing all the movies at the time, all the action movies, right? And then, yes, they went on to do Unbreakable. Have they done anything since Unbreakable?
Not that I can think of.
Yeah, off the top of my head. So, like, first two movies, based on books... Third movie, based on a already existing screenplay that they just retrofitted to make fit their John McClane. And, you know, the second movie, he was still a little cursy and, you know, struggling and scared, but not as much as the first one.
Yeah.
The third one, he's just hung over the whole time.
Yeah.
But he's doing some crazy shit. Like, for the first hour of the movie, it's not that crazy. The craziest thing is he survives the explosion on the train.
Yeah.
Which, okay, you know, people can survive that shit, you know. Not everyone's going to die. But then towards the end of the movie, there's a part where he's in the tunnel and the water's coming through and he gets on top of the truck and he's kind of like surfing the truck.
Yeah, he totally dead.
And then...
That truck would not have surfed.
Yeah, right. And then later, him and Samuel Jackson, they have to jump... What do? They jump off the bridge onto a ship?
Something like that.
With like a cable?
Yeah.
Right?
And their legs don't break.
And they live, and they totally live. Yeah. Yeah. Aforementioned, remember, we talked about Alan Rickman dropping 3 feet, cracked a bunch of ligaments in his knee. These guys jumped off a bridge onto a moving cargo ship.
Perfect. Nothing. Fine.
Well, not nothing. Yeah, a little bit of blood and grease on them, but still, yeah. So, they're already losing it. But what saves that movie, McTiernan's back, and his sure-handed direction.
Yeah.
McClane still has that same humor to him. You know, Bruce Willis still taps into that. And that's amplified by him being paired with Samuel Jackson and making it a two-hander.
Yeah.
Both good and bad. Good because it worked in this instance. Zeus is a fun character. Samuel Jackson's great as a character. And their bickering and the way they work together throughout the movie. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Bad because then from that point forward, now it feels like whenever it's a McClane movie, he's got to have a sidekick. Which sucks now.
Yes, you're right.
We liked how he was by himself, a loner.
Now
he's got sidekicks. Now, they had to be like, we're tying this to Die Hard 1. We had the great Alan Rickman.
Yep.
Can we bring in to be the villain?
Irons.
Obviously, can't bring Alan Rickman back, even with a fake nose. He won't do it. Jeremy Irons, what I feel like is, I won't say the poor man's Alan Rickman. I'll give you the Alan Rickman at like tax-free. Duty-free Alan Rickman. He's not dollar store Alan Rickman.
No.
You're still paying full price. You're just not paying any taxes on him.
Yeah.
He's almost there. He's a little more down here. He's Jeremy Irons.
He's good.
Jeremy Irons is good.
He's not Alan Rickman.
And his character Simon is a pretty good character, but it's no Hans Gruber. He's trying to be his brother, right?
Yep.
He's his older brother. Even though Rickman's like 2 years older than him. Who cares about facts? And a little known factoid, unless you pay attention to the show, when you do, Jeremy Irons is weird German, is English inflected German accent that he does. And then he muffled it up. He sounds like Bane. He's like, yes. Which is 41 divided by 2? Well, one of his riddles or something like that. Anyway, where's my randomizer? Anyway, my Baneomizer.
I don't know. Where is your tube?
My tube?
Oh, there it is. I see it.
It's over there. Now.
Hands up.
Die Hard 3. Hands up. Die Hard 3 isn't. It's good. It's fun to watch. If you compare it to Die Hard, it's like, you know, we're falling away.
Oh, totally.
Die Hard 2 is even closer to a Die Hard movie than Die Hard 3 was.
Yeah.
But still, Die Hard 3 is still good. 2007. Jump cut. Smash cut. 12 years later. 12 goddamn years later. That's a long time between sequels.
Yeah, it is.
Live Free or Die Hard. Released in foreign markets, international markets, as Die Hard 4.0. Which is hard. I can't decide which of those two titles is worse.
4.0. Definitely worse.
You think so?
Yes.
Live Free or Die Hard doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't matter. It's worse. Die Hard 4.0 sounds like an awful computer program.
That sounds like an awful computer program. And obviously, the whole movie's about computers. Ooh. Hackers. Whoa. Never been a good movie about hackers, which does not bode well for that Michael Mann movie coming out, Black Hat.
And
never been a good
movie
about hackers.
It also does not bode well for that movie called Hackers.
That's part of the proof of why. Never. Hackers, terrible.
Robin falls in love with Angelina Jolie. Hackers.
$110 million budget. $110 million.
Waste of $110 million.
Not one of grosses 383 worldwide.
Oh, it's so awful. Why do people like shit?
As a matter of fact, Drew, going back and looking, Live Free or Die Hard, pretty well reviewed. Like reviews that are just as favorable as Die Hard 2 and 3, if not even more so.
But wasn't it rated PG-13?
It was rated PG-13, which is why it's the only Die Hard movie. That's not true. Because I didn't see the first two. I was a little too young to see the first two in theaters. Third one I saw in theaters. Fourth one I refused to spend any money to see a PG-13 Die Hard movie. Mm-hmm. Refused! And I was like, you know what? I'll just never see it. I'll just never see this. What I know is going to be a travesty. And then they put out the unrated edition with the digital blood.
Yeah.
And the fucks put back in. Because they did film them saying fucks, and then they took all the fucks out.
So stupid.
They put the fucks back in to make it R-rated.
It was still awful.
And then I watched that, and guess what? Digital awful. Blood and a bunch of fucks does not a movie make.
Awful.
Not a good movie make. Directed by Len Wiseman. Here are the films of Len Wiseman. He got this movie based on Underworld and Underworld Evolution.
Mm.
And that's it. Those are the only movies he had directed. And Underworld.
It's vampires and werewolves.
I remember sitting down and see Underworld. I was like, ooh, gunfighting action movie between werewolves and vampires who like fucking are gonna kung fu fight, gun fight, you know, Matrix style, whatever. Well, and then Kate Beckinsale.
In the first one, Kate Beckinsale was.
She's in a few of them. She's in most of them.
She was running around and skin tight, whatever.
I was like, this should be great. This should be fun. I'm looking forward to it. And then it bored the fuck out of me. It's the most boring goddamn movie.
Yeah. Kate Beckinsale's hot.
Yeah. We all know. And then after this movie, he got the Total Recall remake, which again,
awful.
Its biggest sin is that it's fucking boring.
Yeah.
The dude makes boring, unimaginative movies. Live Free or Die Hard. It is up there with him, man, if you ask me.
Oh, yeah. No, dude. I mean, it's no good.
Based, this one, first two based on a book. Two books by different authors. Third one, based on a screenplay for fucking just a spec screenplay. The fourth one, based on a magazine article. The 1997 Wired magazine article called A Farewell to Arms by John Carlin. Was then turned into a script called WW3.com.
Really?
The guy who... ever see Enemy of the State?
Yes.
The guy who... What, Gene Hackman and Will Smith?
Yes.
The guy who wrote that wrote this WW3.com. Got passed around Hollywood here and there. Someone found it. Turned into a Die Hard movie. The first and only film in the series, like we said, to be rated PG-13 because they're trying to make mad money. Bruce Willis has said that this is his favorite Die Hard movie, even more so than the first. Yeah, that is. Yeah, think about that.
That is a travesty.
Kill your idols. What is it? Shoot the author.
Seriously,
because that is bad. Die Hard 4 now features a McClane who
get hurt.
At the beginning of the movie, his daughter says, like, remember, don't curse. And he's like, all right, let's take away all the things that are human about him.
Yep.
He can't curse. He's not going to get frustrated about things.
Nope.
He's going to kind of like surf on the wing of a Harrier jet.
Yep.
And then he's going to like slide down the wing and then drop 60 feet while a fireball comes at him. He's going to launch cars up at helicopters. Yes. And they're going to dodge cars, like, by inches. And
well, it's because he is now a highly trained action star, this John McClane.
He is.
He went from being a New York cop to a highly trained and skilled action star.
Yeah, that first Die Hard movie, it was Bruce Willis' first time out. He's like, I don't know how to do all this action shit, so it's going to be realistic. And now he's like, oh, I know. That's so true. That son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the unbreakable character. He wandered onto the Die Hard set. Someone gave him a leather jacket. Like, oh, his head's still shaved. Ah, fuck it.
Nah, it's cool.
Now McClane doesn't have hair. That's part of the thing. He had a receding hairline.
Yeah.
Could you grow it out a little bit? Show the world how bald you are. How bald McClane is. Again, the sidekick. He has this... it was originally going to be his son.
Mm-hmm.
But
they saved that.
They saved that. Mwah, that nugget. They saved that one for later. It was originally going to be his son. So instead they shoehorned in his daughter, played by the... who I find always delightful, Mary Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she's fine in the movie because, you know, she's her. She's great. But... So Lucy characters in the movie. Son becomes just Random Hacker. Random Hacker was... going to be played by... There's a whole... plethora of people end up somehow going to Justin Long. Which is like, come on, guys. He's okay, but I don't want to see him in my goddamn Die Hard movie.
Yeah, no.
You know who else I don't want to see in my goddamn Die Hard movie?
Who?
Kevin Smith.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. Part of the reason I think he got that is because he did a pass on the screenplay. He's like, gave it his script doctoring. Probably had a couple of dick jokes in there.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, this is PG-13. We got to take these things out. Can he make them ball fart jokes instead? He's like, oh, I'll see what I can do. So he's in it. And it's Hans Gruber, right?
Yes.
And then he got Die Hard 2, they were smart enough, like, we can't match Hans Gruber, so we're going to give you John Amos and William Sadler and fucking the original Django.
Yeah.
Trio of good dudes.
Yeah.
They introduced William Sadler. He was doing naked martial arts in this hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
Very memorable opening. Introduction to a character. Right? Guy's fucking ripped. It's doing like hard Tai Chi. Almost looks like he's doing Tai Chi, but he's doing it hard. He's
flexing.
It's like, yeah.
It's flexing Tai Chi.
He's like sweating. It's obviously 7:30 in the morning. Yep. He's sweating balls. He's like, in a dark room. Die Hard 3, Jeremy Irons, who, like I said, duty-free Alan Rickman, you know, it's pretty damn good. Plus, then they got that chick who didn't see anything.
Yeah, what was up with that?
She's like some pop star or something that McTiernan was like, this girl's pretty good.
Okay.
And then that big dude. Anyway, this one. I like the guy a lot. He's good. But Timothy Oliphant is fucking nothing in this movie. He is blank slate. What can you tell me, Drew, about the bad guy for Die Hard 4?
I forgot there was even one.
He's the white guy.
Yeah.
He's the white guy that's controlling all the streetlights. I forgot what they were doing. They were like shutting down electric grids.
I don't remember any of that.
So stupid. So stupid.
I really don't remember that much of Die Hard 4 at all.
Because it's not memorable. Because it is not memorable. It is not good. But made $383 million worldwide. You know what that means.
Sequel!
2013. This is just last year.
So awful.
Very recently. They actually scaled back the budget. $92 million on this one. Smart move. Ended up making $304 million worldwide. So, that's made less than the last one. First one to go down in gross.
Yeah.
And of that 304 worldwide, 237 was international. This movie only made like 60-something million dollars
here.
Nobody
cared about it here in the States.
No one cared about it because we could smell the stench of rotten corpse emanating from it like the plague had just hit in the middle of the summer in Louisiana. Like, this thing stinks to high heaven. We can smell it from back here. Good Day to Die Hard. Directed by John Moore. We should have known. Well, I knew. But everyone else should have known this movie was going to stink. You know why? Because John Moore is the guy who made Behind Enemy Lines, The Omen,
awful,
and Max Payne.
Wow, what a stinker.
I was also going to mention Flight of the Phoenix, but no one remembers that movie.
No, wait. Was that the one where someone's plane gets stuck in the desert?
Yes. And they have to rebuild it to get out.
Who?
It's a remake.
Who rebuilds it, though? Trying to think who's the lead in that.
Bruce Greenwood? Matthew McConaughey. No, that's Sahara. Steve Zahn. That's also Sahara.
No. Oh, it's
Greg Kinnear.
No. What's his face?
Joel McHale.
He played Jake Gyllenhaal's dad in Day After Tomorrow.
Randy Quaid.
It was Quaid. Yes, it was Randy Quaid.
Dennis Quaid.
Dennis Quaid and Tyrese.
Randy Quaid's a crazy one. Oh, and Tyrese himself went on to have a fantastic film career in Fast and Furious 4 through 7?
Something like that.
So John Moore is a horrible director. Made a horrible movie.
Yes.
What a shock. The original director was going to be Noam Murrow, who commercial director.
Okay.
That was going to be his first movie. He ended up not making it. Instead, his first movie was 300 Rise of an Empire. So I would like to think if he ended up making Good Day to Die Hard, it would have featured more violent choke sex.
Yes, lots of violent choke sex.
I don't know about lots. Just more. There
was already a lot. That scene was kind of long.
Yeah, but I'm saying, I think that was expected for it to be in 300. If it was a Die Hard movie, it would have been like 5 seconds of choke sex. But he would have found a way to put it in there.
Yeah.
And since that movie has zero choke sex, 5 seconds would be more.
Yeah, I guess you're okay.
Just had to break it down for you there. That's all. Now, for a second there, the producers, they were playing with the idea of actually making a decent movie.
They just threw that idea out the window?
No, well, I don't know if they threw it out the window, but they were like, you know what? What other directors could we possibly get for this movie? So other directors considered before they settled on John Moore. Before they settled on the guy made Behind Enemy Lines. I'm going to tell you about who wanted to make the new Die Hard.
Okay.
Joe Cornish. I know you don't know the name. Joe Cornish is the guy who made Attack the Block.
Awesome.
And he co-wrote a bunch of stuff with Edgar Wright.
That would have been a good Die Hard.
Would have been an interesting Die Hard, right? Probably would have been set in England somehow. They would have found a way to reset it. Justin Lin. Speaking of the Fast and Furious movies, he's the guy who did Fast and Furious 3, 4, 5, 6. And those movies are getting better action-wise, you know. And with the way they're going with fucking McClane, he might as well exist in the Fast and Furious universe at this point, where they're driving cars off of cliffs and dropping 250 feet to the water below, and they jump out and they swim away and everything's cool. You know what I'm talking about? And finally, the Die Hard movie I know we all really want to see, and that we'll never get, Nicholas Winding Refn's Die Hard.
Ooh. What about Drive Hard? Or maybe God Only Knows Hard. That would have been a weird
movie. Only God's Hard.
I don't know about that one. I don't know about that one.
I do.
You know? Do you?
No.
Is he?
I'm having some problems with my thing here because I was going to do one of these. Oh, you can't even hear it. I was going to do one of these.
Yep.
Yeah, almost had Only God Drives Hard. Didn't happen. Now, this is also interesting. Actors who auditioned for the role of the son.
Okay.
Like you said, we see that wonderful nugget.
Yeah.
Aaron Paul.
Okay.
Remember, this character has to not only be McClane's son, but has to be was he a CIA agent of some sort?
Some sort of government dude.
Badass. Yeah, specifically, he's a government badass. Yeah. Of course, McClane's seed would sprout a government badass.
Of course.
Of course. Liam Hemsworth.
Okay.
So, baby Thor.
No. Thor Light.
Paul Walker.
Okay. That would have been awful.
Ben Foster.
Ooh.
That guy doesn't work enough, man.
No, he doesn't. He's good.
Milo Ventimiglia. Ventimiglia. Ventimiglia.
I don't know who that
is. He was in Heroes, and then he played Rocky's son in Rocky Balboa. Okay. That guy. And where am I? And finally, Paul Dano.
Really?
Yeah. He was like, I can do action. I can do it.
And no,
like,
you can't.
They're like, we don't think he can.
I agree. So, I don't think he can.
And then end up going to Australian Jai Courtney, who at that point had only really done a bunch of Australian TV. You know, Jack Reacher had come out like 2 months prior to that.
Yeah, he was the bad guy.
He was the bad guy in that, which means he didn't get the Die Hard role based on Jack Reacher because no one had seen Jack Reacher yet. So he got it based on his agent,
I guess.
Auditioning, you know, good hustling, whatever. He's going to be in a movie. He's going to be in Suicide Squad. That Suicide Squad movie.
Yeah.
Where apparently he's going to be allowed to use his own Australian accent.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. So Good Day Die Hard comes out, and it is easily the worst reviewed of the bunch. It's actually the only one technically of all five of them to have a unfavorable rating on the Rotten Tomatoes.
Really?
Yeah, and it's quite low, too, so the drop-off is huge.
It's an awful movie.
It is downright terrible. First off, McClane doesn't even do much. His son does most of the shit.
McClane is indestructible.
Yeah, going back to him being indestructible, in the opening of the movie, he gets in that car chase in Russia, where at one point, he's standing in the middle of the street, he turns around, and he gets hit by a car.
Yeah,
and
straight
then,
up.
And then he doesn't even fall over. He, like, backs up a few feet, and he's like, oh! And then he carjacks the guy, right? And then he gets into a car accident where his car, huge truck, like flips like crazy and crashes, and then he just climbs out and he's like, hey, how's it going?
Hey,
I'm McClane.
I'm on vacation.
He says, I'm on vacation at least four times. Conservative guess. Somewhere from four to six times. He says, I'm on vacation. Like, that's the running quote joke of the movie. The, you know, definition of joke being very loose here. And
it's awful. It's the worst of the bunch.
Easily. And I hate Die Hard 4. I fucking hate it. I'll never watch it again. But Die Hard 5, Good Day to Die Hard, I wish I could erase it from my memory banks. Yeah. I went to... There was literally... I'm going to call it 8 seconds of footage that I enjoyed in that movie.
If that.
There's a part where they get to his son's hideout. And, you know, they follow them there, so all the bad guys are coming in. So on the way out, while all the people are streaming in, on the way out, he just hits a
a button on the side, and it explodes his place on the inside while all the people are in it, which is something I've seen in other movies, but I still like the way it was done. That lasted about 3 seconds. And then towards the end, there's a scene where there's huge, like, I think it's a helicopter, right? It's like firing a machine gun at them on a rooftop. And this is goddamn mind-boggling, right? Because up until this point, the entire movie, it's modern, postmodern action bullshit, hyper editing, quick moving cameras, shaky cameras. I mean, 100% the complete opposite of Die Hard.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's this moment towards the end where he's on the rooftop, and like Jai Courtney, his character, he's got to run across the rooftop without getting machine gunned by this giant helicopter. And he gets up, he starts running, and then it cuts to slow motion, and it's a fucking nice, steady, clean shot. I'll say that's maybe a good 5 seconds of him running, and then the, you know, shit's flying around him, and it's well composed, it looks good, and then
it's over.
And then it's over. And then it quickly goes like, if you can see me, people, I'm shaking really fast right now. I know it's a visual podcast. It's not an audio podcast.
It's a visual
podcast. You can't see the visual jokes, so we don't have the camera set up.
It's a visual podcast.
We do have the camera set up, but they're not broadcasting anywhere.
Just close your eyes and imagine, even if you don't know what Chris looks like. Just imagine some dude.
Just look at the logo.
Waving his arms.
Imagine the cartoon version of me waving my arms.
There we go. That works. That is your face.
That is my face. 100%. It's, so it's just, it's the opposite of what makes Die Hard great. So how about this? Watch the movies in reverse.
And watch them get better.
Watch them get better. Watch Bruce Willis get younger. Watch him Benjamin Button that shit. They'll get better. And then you're like, oh, and then he gets Die Hard. And it's kind of like the Fast and Furious movies. Like, well, it took him so long to get good. How did that happen? But, you know, that's the way it is. Let me see what I'm just pulling this up here. So, Die Hard.
It's an awesome movie.
Pretty damn great. Pretty damn amazing. Very influential.
Not the greatest franchise, but whatever.
Unfortunately, no. Not the greatest franchise. But you know what? They can keep making these goddamn shitty Die Hard movies. And
they'll keep making money.
Willis said he wants to make another one, and they will keep making money. But I'm saying, they can keep making these shitty sequels. The original is still the original.
It's so awesome.
So damn good. You can still watch it. You can still go back. It's great. Let's all share in our love of Die Hard together. Get the family together. Get some eggnog. Sit down in front of your curved Ultra HD 3D high def plasma LED projection TV.
And the whole family can say yippee-ki-yay motherfucker
together.
The
whole family can say it together.
With, you know, from the tiny little kids all the way to grandma.
And they all have a good laugh and bond in the awesomeness. But there. That was right. True, sir. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
This episode, I thought this was going to be like a 30-minute episode.
Hour plus.
Hour 18.
It's a good thing I ate before.
Guys, thank you very much for downloading. We appreciate it. Email the show at cinemacrespo@gmail.com. Hit me up on Twitter at I am Chris Crespo. Hit Drew up at antihero419. He's also on Snapchat, ladies. Send him your titties.
Nobody cares, Chris.
Well, you know, I'm not on Snapchat.
At this point in time, I don't even care. I don't even know.
Oh, you haven't even checked. I bet you got a whole bunch of titty pictures in there. We're going to look at Drew's titty pictures on Snapchat. You guys watch Die Hard. We are out of here.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing.